I'm Jim Stevenson. Welcome to The Game Room.
I achieved a life goal and a dream of myself, which I had for many, many years.
Dominic Thiem of Austria came from behind at the U.S. Open in New York to beat German Alexander Zverev 2-6, 4-6, 6-4, 6-3, 7-6 in a nerve-rattling battle for both in search of their first Grand Slam title.
For him, it was his first major finals, and for him was the same like for me. We both didn't face one of the big three, so I guess that was in the back of the head for both of us, and that's why we were on nerves, because was a very good chance for the both of us.
Without Novak Djokovic, Rafael Nadal, or Roger Federer in the way, the 27-year-old world number three Thiem appeared to have blown his chance as he fell two sets behind Zverev. But the title ultimately came to the very end.
In a fifth set tiebreak, anybody can win. So I think it's very understandable that we both didn't play our highest pace anymore.
While he felt the level of play had deteriorated, both were equally tired but tough to keep bodies and minds going.
When he served for the match, I was struggling physically, but I also thought that he is not the freshest anymore, so I was just hoping to maybe get another chance, that he's not serving that huge anymore like he did in the beginning of the match, and I played a great game there and brought myself back into the match.
For Zverev, missed opportunities.
I was super close to being Grand Slam champion. You know, I was a few games away, maybe a few points away, but for me, what upset me the most, I think, is not the third set or something like that, it's the fifth set. I had a lot of chances in the fifth set. Didn't use them.
And that left Thiem as the first player to win a Grand Slam from having trailed by two sets since Gaston Gaudio at the 2004 French Open. Coronavirus aside, both met at center court after the match.
We are really good friends. We have a long-term friendship, long-term rivalry, and I think that we were both tested negative maybe 14 times, something like that. This week, and we just wanted to share this moment, and I guess that we didn't put anybody in danger, so I think it was fine.
Zverev, of course, was dejected.
Losing 7-6 in the fifth after being two sets love and a breakup is not easy. At the speech, I mean, I got emotional. I couldn't put two words together. I don't actually remember what I said. So, yeah, it was a difficult moment for me.
Thiem, who had lost all three of his previous Grand Slam final appearances, is the second Austrian to win a Grand Slam after Thomas Muster's 1995 French Open title. Thiem thanked, well, his team.
I mean, it's by far not only myself. It's an accomplishment from all my team, from all my family, and I guess also that today is the day where I gave back a huge amount of what they did for me.
Zverev, playing in his first Grand Slam final, says he will win one day.
I mean, I'm 23 years old. I don't think it's my last chance, and I do believe that I will be a Grand Slam champion at some point.
Thiem is the first player born in the 1990s to claim a men's Grand Slam, and the first outside of the big three, Nadal, Djokovic, and Federer, to claim one since Stan Wawrinka's 2016 U.S. Open triumph. Thiem's title dream began early.
Of course, as a kid as well, when I started to play tennis, but back then it's so far away, and then I got closer and closer to the top, and at one point I realized that, wow, maybe one day I can really win one of the four biggest titles in tennis. And I put a lot of work in. I mean, I dedicated basically my whole life until this point to win one of the four majors, and now I did it.
I feel like this year was very strange, so honestly, to have one good thing happen for me is really satisfying.
It's quite a good thing for Naomi Osaka of Japan, who won the U.S. Open women's singles title. She found her latest win a little incomprehensible.
For me, it's a bit weird because I feel like it's happened recently, but at the same time, it feels like, you know, it happened a long time ago, Australian Open.
That title in 2019 and her 2018 U.S. Open win makes Osaka the first Asian player to claim three Grand Slam tennis titles. Osaka topped Victoria Azarenka of Belarus 1-6, 6-3, 6-3.
Yeah, I mean, I would say there are definitely moments or points, per se, during the match where, you know, you feel the pressure, but then you just have to think to yourself, probably the other person feels the same way. And, you know, this is a fun thing about sports, is that it's a competition.
Osaka says she's learned much since her first U.S. Open win.
When I first did it, I wasn't, you know, prepared for everything, and I wasn't aware of how much work is going to be put in next time. So I would definitely say I'm more humbled now, and I'm more grateful.
And grateful for the attention received for the face masks she's been wearing after each win, with each mask bearing the name of a victim of social injustice.
It's a bit weird because I never really thought people would care about my voice or the things that I'm doing, but I feel like there's a purpose, and I just want, you know, more people to hear what I... Well, I'm not really talking, but, you know, hear what I have to say, but I'm not really talking.
Naomi Osaka's big win has sparked big reactions from fans in Tokyo, eager to praise her stand against social injustice. 67-year-old Kazuyoshi Hosoya, who works at a university in Tokyo, was searching for a newspaper about Osaka's victory. I jumped for joy at her win. I know she's rallying for racial justice, and I've heard on TV that she was doing her best to use all seven face masks in reaching the final. I think this is amazing that she actually accomplished this, using all seven masks. Masataro Tanimoto is a 26-year-old office worker in Tokyo. Including myself, I think there are many people who are not interested in the topic like racism, but Osaka has created an opportunity to open the topic. Although people may agree or disagree, I think it is a good thing that the issue becomes a topic of discussion. Osaka's strident views on social media have made her an icon for many young Japanese, like 24-year-old Wakako Tanaka. I feel happy that a famous person like Osaka engages in such activities to protest against racism, and I hope Japanese celebrities or athletes also follow suit. Osaka, who has a Japanese mother and Haitian father, has become the face of a changing Japan coming to terms with challenges to its self-image as a racially homogenous society. Japan's Olympic minister Seiko Hashimoto insists the rearranged 2020 Games must be held, while the International Olympic Committee says only that it is committed to delivering a safe event. Currently, all the people involved with the Games are working together to prepare, and the athletes are also making considerable efforts towards next year's Games under the circumstances they've been handed. So I think we have to hold the Games at any cost. But with less than a year before the Games are scheduled to begin July 23rd, the biggest question remains whether the Tokyo Olympics can ever take place. Tokyo 2020 CEO Toshiro Muto hopes the Games can become a working model for the future of the Olympics. It is rather difficult for us to expect that the coronavirus pandemic is contained. But if we can deliver the Games in Tokyo with coronavirus, Tokyo can be the role model for the next Olympic Games or other various international events. The best case scenario for the IOC is to hold the Tokyo Games with few or no restrictions in place because of COVID-19, should a vaccine become available. Fan attendance may or may not happen. A so-called bubble for the approximate 11,000 athletes is a possibility. The harshest scenarios are another postponement or cancellation, which would mean financial disaster for Japanese organizers. More than $12.6 billion has been pumped into the project, hundreds of millions more to delay it by another year. Sports fans have a lot to hear each day on VOA. Listen to the sunny side of sports for the latest from Africa, the United States, and around the world.
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Great show, bro.
Find the sunny side of sports on the radio, online, and as a podcast.
This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
I get it.
The Denver Nuggets have been looking for a little respect in the National Basketball Association playoffs.
We have belief. I know there's not a lot of belief. I heard one of the commentators the other day say seven teams are left in the bubble, or eight teams are left in the bubble, and seven of them have a chance to win a championship. And we were the one he did not think we had a chance to win a championship. But we don't listen to all that. We believe in ourselves. We believe in the process that we've been going through for the last 5 years to get us here.
Denver head coach Michael Malone watched as his team fell to the brink of elimination before battling back, erasing a 15-point deficit to trail their best-of-seven series with the Los Angeles Clippers 3-2 with a 111-105 win.
I think our guys understood the way we were playing in the first half wasn't good enough if we were trying to stay here for a longer period of time. I give our guys a tremendous amount of credit. Our second half defense was as good as I've seen. That fourth quarter defense was tremendous and timely offense. I think we scored 38 fourth quarter points. We made seven threes that quarter. Nikola started finding his rhythm, Jamal found his rhythm. Michael Porter made some big plays for us.
Clippers coach Doc Rivers knew his team did not respond.
Well, give them credit. I thought they kept playing, and I didn't think we played the same. I'll just put it that way. I thought we started gambling way too much on defense. I thought we stopped moving the ball on offense. But give them some credit. I thought they hung in there and they just played tough. They're not going to go away. You got to know that. And so give them credit. They stayed in.
Malone says his team is great when it's playing both sides of the court.
It always starts with our defense. And obviously in game four, our defense gave us a chance, but the offense did not. Tonight, it was great to see second half. We have the defense that we need, but the offense came up and helped us convert and come back and win this game. So very resilient group. You know, we've been here before. Our guys believe we're tough. Everybody continues to count us out. That's the way we like it. And we live to die another day.
Paul George of the Clippers was waiting for his next chance.
It's just us not putting him away. That's just simple as it is.
But Denver won Game 6, 111-98, to force a decisive Game 7, and then completed their amazing demolition of the Clippers, 104-89. The defending NBA champion Toronto Raptors took the Boston Celtics to a Game 7, where Boston prevailed 92-87. Jason Tatum thinks the hard-fought series will help the Celtics as they advanced to play the Miami Heat.
They're the defending champs. They got a lot of heart, and they made us earn that. And I think when you're trying to achieve something as special as winning a championship, you're going to have to go through some things. Some heartbreaks, some tough moments, a lot of adversity, and just see how you respond. And I think we responded really well from almost being up 3-0 to being tied 2-2 to 3-3 and coming into a must-win game. It was big.
Jaylen Brown says the intangibles of the game were big.
Will, determination, resiliency, it's a lot of that stuff that you can't find on the stat sheet. And that's what this game was about.
Boston head coach Brad Stevens was ready to shift gears.
I've coached in a lot of playoff games now and a lot of playoff series, a lot of NCAA tournament games. And, you know, I'd say that we saw more defenses and more stuff. And right when something worked, the next play, it didn't work anymore. You know, and that's a credit to them. They keep you on your toes the whole time. We should definitely have a lot more in our toolbox to go back to. But we also have to get ready for a different, more unique team now in Miami.
For all of the playoff teams except one, the end of the season comes hard, as Toronto head coach Nick Nurse notes.
And, you know, when you watch our team play most nights, you win, lose, or draw, you got to come out of there saying, you know, at least those guys gave you everything they had. And that's, and I think they do it at an extraordinary level. You know, it's always sad when a season ends, that's for sure.
The Miami Heat would get the best of the Celtics in Game 1 of their series, 117-114. Reigning Formula One World Champion Lewis Hamilton reflected on a tough day of driving in Italy during an incident-packed Tuscany Grand Prix.
It was a hell of a day. I feel like I just feel exhausted because it's like, yeah, we did three races today. And Valtteri was pushing the whole time. It's one of the most physical races there is, I think.
Hamilton's Mercedes teammate Valtteri Bottas followed, as he does more often than not, to play second.
It started like perfectly, the first start, and also giving the position at the first safety car restart. That, I felt that was nice. Then after that, not my day, but pace was good, apart from some tire issues with the medium tire, but otherwise okay.
Red Bull's Alex Albon was third.
We were fighting the whole time. And I didn't want the same thing happen again. I was like, oh God, you know, we got 8 laps or 9 laps to overtake everyone. And I was pretty determined, to be honest. As soon as I had that bad start, I knew I had to be aggressive from turn one onwards.
Hamilton now has 90 Grand Prix wins, putting him just one behind the all-time record total of German Michael Schumacher. The Brit is 65 points ahead of Bottas in the Drivers' Championship.
I'm very happy. There's a reason I picked this place, because I really enjoy playing golf here.
South African golfer George Coetzee came to the Portugal Masters to revive his game.
It was kind of always part of my plan to play this event and to prepare for it properly, and I felt like we did that. Even though my game wasn't 100% there, I felt like my head was, and really happy to have pulled it off.
Coetzee was a two-shot winner over English golfer Laurie Cantor, who came out of trouble on the 15th hole.
We've seen all week, you can actually hit, I felt like I hit a reasonable tee shot. I just obviously favour the right side, and a couple of yards in that rough, it was just dead. So I was trying to just kind of hack something up front right, overdid it, and the bunker shot was horrendous, to be honest. There, so I was trying to get it just running up the tier and have some sort of padded it, but to hold that putt is awesome.
Then he felt winning was possible.
At that point, I still felt like I maybe had a chance if, you know, anything can happen on 16, 17, 18, but George is class, isn't he? So he's closed out really well.
Coetzee was coming off a Sunshine Tour win ahead of the main European Tour event.
Last week I was really comfortable, and this week I really wasn't. And I think that's kind of the steps you have to take. You have to get used to kind of maybe winning ugly, you can say. And when you're not in your comfort zone and playing well and around people that you know, it's a little bit more uncomfortable and more difficult to pull off. But it's nice to have done it.
The win catapults the South African back into the world's top 100.
I've been hanging around 150 for the last 4 years, so it's nice that obviously I've been playing well this year, and I've had a lot of top tens, and the momentum was moving that way, and I wasn't too phased about the fact that I wanted to be back in the top 100. I felt like if I just kept playing the way I did, I'd probably get there in the end. It's nice to kind of skip a couple of top tens and go straight to the top 100.
And even though it was a long week, holding the trophy felt good.
It's nice, eh? It's not that heavy. I thought I'd be tired by now, but I'm quite happy just holding it there.
The Game Room opens with new stories each week, or play anytime on voanews.com.